Wheels Up. We are Wheels Up at 9:07. Good morning and welcome. This is Current State on WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. Michigan Governor Rick Snyder is next to help us launch our new daily news and culture magazine here on WKAR, and we're really happy you tuned in. Maybe you've heard us talking about our new show in recent weeks. Maybe you read about it in City Pulse or elsewhere. Current State's aim is to serve up relevant and interesting segments with guests who have diverse but informed opinions and insights on a wide variety of topics. We've taken little, if anything, off the table as far as our subject matter goes. Current State is going to be a bunch of what you'd expect. It's going to be mid-Michigan news and politics and education and jobs, but it's also going to be music and history and performance and sports, travel and community involvement. And with your input, which we view as essential, it's going to become more. We want to continually evolve into something better than we were last month or even last week, if possible. There's an old saw, I'm sure you've heard it, that goes, you're either getting better or you're getting worse. We intend to get better. I've spent over 50 of my 59 years within about a half an hour of where I'm sitting right now here in East Lansing. Graduated from MSU, met my superstar wife here, raised our kids in Mason and Meridian Township. I have loved rubbing shoulders with everybody in the area. People like me who grew up here and are still here, all you homies, but lots of others too whose stories WKAR has been able to share. An excited family about to move into their state-of-the-art environmental house. An Iraq war veteran from Meridian Township, scarred enough by life in war that he finally took his own life. MSU students from Libya, exultant over a new beginning for their country, while others among them, fellow Libyans, mind you, despaired over the future of their country without Muammar Gaddafi. Musicians and farmers, actors, line workers, marijuana merchants, college researchers, people living under the Shiawassee Street Bridge, unsung local officials and their supporters, volunteers pursuing community involvement. They are all here among us. We want Current State to be their platform. We encourage you to share your thoughts of what Current State could be and should be. You can email us at currentstate@wkar.org. Ideas, criticism, more of this, less of that, never hesitate. currentstate@wkar.org. And you can follow us on Twitter at @KARCurrentState. And again, welcome. And here on the week of the State of the State Address in Michigan, Current State went right to the top of the A-list. A big thanks to Michigan Governor Rick Snyder for sitting down with me a couple of days ago to take a look ahead and to take a look in the rearview mirror. There's quite a bit in the rearview mirror right now. Objects are closer than they appear. And I first asked Governor Snyder what he would like listeners' takeaway to be from his Wednesday night address.
Michigan continues to be the comeback state. We continue to improve, but we still have a lot more work to do. I'm proud of what's been accomplished over the last 2 years, but we just need to keep going. If you look at it, does anyone want to go back to 2009 in Michigan? I think the answer would be no. And if you look at it, we've made significant progress. We had the sixth fastest growing economy in the nation over the last year or so. Personal income's going up. Homes are being sold again. A lot of good things. But now's not the time to stop. Let's not fall on the old habits of the past and go backward again. Let's keep moving forward.
You've acknowledged that you'll be addressing transportation infrastructure on Wednesday night. What's the best funding mechanism for all of the revenue necessary for that? Is it new revenue? Is it fiscal adjustments? How is that going to fit together?
Well, it's always a combination of things. It's making sure you're spending the money smart, the first thing, because you shouldn't ask for money if you can't deploy it efficiently in a thoughtful way. And we actually have a lot of best practices already going in Michigan that we put in place over the last few years. So there's good opportunity there. We do need additional revenue. If you look at it, it's really a case of, if you stop and think about it, it's about doing preventive maintenance to make sure we keep things good and don't fall into major disrepair because, again, I don't think anyone's real happy with our roads today. And if you stop and think about it, shouldn't we be investing now so we don't have some huge crisis in the future we're going to stick our kids with? I describe it much like the oil change analogy. You go buy a new car, and have you ever heard anyone stand up and say, now that I bought this new car, I want to save some money, so I'm going to promise I'm not going to change my oil. And why is that? Because they know they'd have to rebuild an engine after so many miles. That's sort of where we're at today. We're not doing enough in terms of the preventive side, much like an oil change, and we're going to look at a really huge bill that we'll be giving our kids in about 10-plus years if we don't do more revenue today. So I view it as actually saving us money.
It's easy to assume you and other Republicans might want to take a breather from more partisan issues, but what about issues like the Education Assessment Authority? Can you generate bipartisan support for such a powerful educational body?
Well, it should. If you look at it, it's all about the kids. I don't view that as a partisan issue. It's about student growth. And in Michigan, we're not doing a very good job of helping our students grow. Well, we've got great teachers, administrators, people in the system, but we're not delivering results. And the Educational Achievement Authority is off to a good start. And it's focused in on the most persistently failing schools in our state to really turn them around. I was just there this last week visiting a school, talking to parents, talking to teachers, talking to students. And it's exciting. It is at the innovative front edge of innovation and education all across America, not just Michigan.
The decision to promote right to work in the Pure Michigan campaign in the Wall Street Journal generated some pretty intense criticism. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I view that the MEDC has been running a Pure Michigan business campaign for the last year and a half. And they were making decisions about continuing their normal campaign process of promoting Michigan. So I view it as it's in their normal course of business to say, hey, these activities are going on in Michigan that companies should look to bring jobs to our state.
There wasn't a line that was crossed with such an issue like right to work that became so inflammatory?
Well, if you look at it, the MEDC's role isn't, they're not partisan at all. And again, they designed their own ad campaigns. They came up with the theme, the idea, because they thought it would be helpful to bring jobs to Michigan.
Is running for a second term a done deal?
I haven't announced that I'm running. If you look at it, I'm honored to be governor of Michigan. When I originally did this, I talked about a 10-year plan, a couple years running, 8 years as governor. And there's still quite a few more things to do, but I haven't made any formal announcement.
What do you think the timetable would be on that decision?
Sometime during this year, during 2013.
Your approval rating took a pretty serious hit a month ago and is still lower than I imagine you would like it. How do you get those moderates back that you'll need to win next year if you run?
Again, this is about doing the right thing for the people of Michigan. They're my customer. And if you look at it a year ago or so, if you go to 2011, I had major drop in approval ratings because we had to do a lot of tough stuff. This is not an easy job, but I really am focused on doing what's best for all the citizens of Michigan. And if you have confidence in that, and I do, that we're doing the right things, good things are going to go on. It's about more and better jobs and a future for our kids, and people can make their own assessment. But Michigan's much better positioned today than it would have been back in 2009, for example. We're far ahead of where we were, and we're on a positive path to being a great state again.
But you're confident you can get people back that you've presumably lost.
Yeah, well, again, change is hard. Everybody likes change until it actually shows up, and then it becomes a difficult thing for many people. And I appreciate that. I don't minimize that at all. And again, we had more change going on. That's difficult, but let's keep moving forward, because hasn't Michigan gotten better and better over the last couple of years, and that's the path we're on.
There's a great deal of confusion over how right to work will impact Michigan in the coming years. There's conflicting data. How long do you think it will take right to work to demonstrate what its impact will be? When will this start to become clearer in your view?
Well, it's a gradual thing if you really look at what's going on with right to work. And again, I prefer to call it freedom to choose, because that's what it's really about. It's between a worker and their union and their relationship about how they can be more successful, hopefully. So it's not an overnight thing. It's not a light switch thing. And that was one of the interesting things. If you look at the protests and the people upset, I think as you watch over the next year or two, you're not going to find huge controversy coming out of a particular issue in terms of how this gets implemented or how it goes on. This is something that's going to be a gradual process that will attract more businesses to Michigan, though. That is clear, that if you look at the track record out there, that now being a freedom to choose state, more businesses that sort of took us off their list will put them on their list to say, let's go to Michigan, let's expand in Michigan.
Not necessarily more low-paying jobs?
No, we are already having that as a problem. And when we We're a non-right-to-work state. If you looked at income levels in Michigan, they'd been in decline over the last decade. In fact, our growth rate is now starting to move back up, and a lot of these jobs aren't going to be union jobs at all. One of the things I'm proud of is we were the third fastest growing state for high-tech jobs this last year. That's a great illustration of saying it's not about pay raises, it's about good, solid jobs, and these aren't going to be union jobs probably in any capacity.
And I've saved my most important question for the end. Who do you like on February 12th in the Michigan-Michigan State game?
Well, they're two great teams playing, but I am a little biased. I root for both teams on every occasion except when they play each other, and I am a Wolverine.
These are good times for your alma mater's basketball team.
It's very exciting. Just set a new record. I was at the game. They went 16-0 recently.
Governor Rick Snyder, you've made our very first edition of Current State on WKAR very special. We're really grateful for your time, and we hope you can stop by again soon.
It's great to be with you, and I hope the show goes well.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Remember, you can hear Governor Rick Snyder's third State of the State address live, that's Wednesday night at 7, here on WKAR. This evening, two new members of the East Lansing School Board are seated for their first meeting. One of them, Kathleen Edsel, joins me now along with East Lansing School Superintendent Dave Chapin, and they're joining me to discuss some ongoing business as well as some newer business. Belated congratulations, Kathleen, if I didn't say it already.
Thanks, Mark.
You must be excited about being inducted tonight and sitting down for your first meeting.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And welcome, Superintendent Dave Chapin.
Thank you, Mark.
Appreciate
it. Congratulations on your new show.
Thank you.
Happy for you and pleased to be a part of your very first show. Thank you.
We wanted to make it local. We intend to make it local, and having you two as our first local guests really is really fantastic. We're really appreciative. Let's get into the reconfiguration and the Red Cedar thing in a bit, because I know there's a lot of other things on the agenda in the East Lansing School District that's on the agenda. There's a technology bond that's up for a vote next month. Now, I'm under the impression there may be a consensus on the district's need for tech improvement. Is that the general feeling around the district, Dave Chapin?
It is. In fact, our community will receive a brochure in the mail scheduled for Wednesday or Thursday of this week, providing detail.
How timely.
Absolutely. This follows some study by our technology committee over a couple of year period of time. A community survey suggesting significant support for a technology bond. I don't want to overstate our need, but the reality is we are in need of an upgrade and additional equipment, tools, technology for our students and our teachers.
Kath, what do you think?
Oh, I would agree.
There's a consensus on the need for new tech.
Okay. I believe through the last couple of years, as other things have been controversial, there's been widespread agreement that the technology needs improvement here in East Lansing.
What's on the short list of those technological needs, just for to be specific, Dave?
Yeah, we've stayed away from an iPad one-to-one or a laptop one-to-one, netbook one-to-one. Kept us a little open-ended given the very dynamic nature of technology, changes in technology and changes in the tools that our students and teachers will need access to current and future. In 2013, the brochure will communicate that there'll be a need for network improvements, including enhanced Wi-Fi coverage, security door access control systems, and actually this is a technology, security, and communication bond.
That is really timely.
A little more comprehensive than simply technology. Increased security camera coverage, classroom audio-visual improvements to all learning spaces, and upgraded computing devices. This is a five-year bond. We have laid out a five-year plan for how we'll bring the funding in and how, in turn, we'll bring the technology into our classrooms and our schools.
How many mills and how much money does it raise?
So it'll be 1.25 mills paid for, and there's a table in the brochure that will come out, 1.25 additional mills, a home that has a value of $200,000, a simple figure with a taxable value of $100,000. The dollar amount will be $125 per year. At the end of 5 years, the technology is purchased, the bill is paid, and we move forward with new decision-making 5 years out.
Now, I didn't expect to get into this at all, but you mentioned the security that's going to be impacted as a result of the technology bond. Do you think that's going to earn you some more yes votes on the technology bond once people know that there's a security dimension to this? And, of course, I think in the back of everybody's mind is the Connecticut school shooting.
Yeah, I'll take that, Kath. We were talking about security well before the incident in Newtown, Connecticut.
Okay.
And this bond was designed as technology, security, and communication beforehand. Linking our bond to a tragedy like that is, I just think that's a little inappropriate. I don't know that that'll how our community will view it, but I would prefer to simply stay away from that tragedy and the timing of this bond. They just happen to coincide, to take that much further, I think it's just, I'm uncomfortable with that and think it inappropriate.
Okay, but it is timely. I mean, if you link security and the technology together, there's a lot of good reasons to vote.
That's absolutely correct. We've had some issues with our security at the elementary school level, not so much at the high school and middle school, but this gives us an opportunity to upgrade our elementary school security. Correct.
Anything to respond there with, Kath?
Well, my experience in the community has been it needs to be clear. To call it a technology bond and then talk about clocks and alarms and so forth. And I do think that the brochure that's going out adds some clarity to that. But that's the feedback I had gotten from the community was $5 million for clocks and alarms. And so the importance is there to spell out what we're getting, you know, as we go along, including security, clocks, alarms, and the upgrades in Wi-Fi and other devices.
Okay.
In that, so,
you support the bond.
I do
though.
Support the
okay.
bond. Yes.
Okay. You two are on opposite sides of the reconfiguration plan that was approved in November. That plan will convert 5 of the 6 elementary schools in the district to K-5 buildings. That's from K-4, and it'll turn McDonald Middle School into a 6th to 8th grade. Kath Edsel, 2 months ago, you told me you were planning to revisit this issue once you joined the board and that you'd make an effort to reverse it. Do you still feel that way? And if so, why?
I do still feel that way. I do still feel passionately about two issues. One is closing Red Cedar Elementary School as an elementary school, as a K-4, a K-5, a K-6. And the second is I'm still not sold on sixth graders moving to the middle school. The bigger issue is the Red Cedar issue. It's a unique school to this district, and it brings in many people from outside the district who would like their children to attend that school. I think that in this day and age, as many other neighboring districts are doing, marketing our uniqueness would make more sense than closing our uniqueness. The plan is to move only the neighborhood children and the Spartan Village children to Glen Cairn, and then move the ELL program into two different buildings. There isn't a plan for the basic classroom that's at Red Cedar, and schools of choice and permeable boundary families will go elsewhere. So it really does destroy what is unique about Red Cedar in this plan. And I'm passionate about what that school gives to the district that is not available in any of the other buildings.
Dave Chapin, without getting too far into the weeds, if that's possible, why is this plan that includes the repurposing of the Red Cedar School the best way forward for East Lansing?
Sure. Well, first of all, let me begin by saying I'm not so convinced that Kath and I are on opposite sides of a lot of issues. There are a wide range of issues that we'll have to deal with as superintendent and school board member, and I'm becoming more and more convinced that Kath and I both have a strong passion for the school district and the betterment of all of our students, and I know we're in agreement there. The other thing I'd like to say before responding is that I too think Red Cedar is a very good school community, terrific students, love the faculty. Our principals that I've worked with, Mindy Emerson and Lorraine Ware at Red Cedar, are both first class. So this is a good school. I'm confident, though, I would say that about our other 5 schools as well. The reality is we have to deal with, I've always looked at this as a school district issue, not a Red Cedar school issue or an individual school neighborhood issue. Our school district is simply out of line with where the rest of the state is for a student body of this size, a configuration that is not consistent with where other schools in the state are, other high-achieving school districts, and we need to make some changes. And with that, you get into a dive about what schools and how and when, and we're in the midst of that, and it's been a difficult community conversation. It has always been about a school district needing to make some changes to deal with an aging infrastructure, an odd configuration of students, or an odd configuration of grade levels, excuse me, and other associated issues that just simply need to be modified. To not look at that is irresponsible.
Kath, I want to revisit one thing. We got just about a minute. You suggested to me back in November when I did a story on Red Cedar that it was it's more constructive to concentrate non-white students in one building rather than allow those students to be more widely dispersed among the white population.
That's not exactly what I said. What I said was that. Historically, Red Cedar and Spartan Village before that was the school that housed the international student body's children. And that became a magnet for many other families who wished to have their children in an international environment. I do not feel, because there have been comments made in the district, that we need to divide that up and share it with everybody. My comment was it's not the job of the child or the person of color to provide a diverse experience for the white individuals in the district.
Right.
So those are kind of two separate things.
Okay. We're out of time. I wish we had more. It flew. I want to thank both of you for your willingness to join Current State this morning. You both obviously have a particular interest in getting 2013 off to a good start and agreeing to dive into this even before the two new members. And we don't want to leave Nate Lake out of this, too. Nate Lake is the other new member on the school board. So best of luck to both of you. Many thanks for joining us here
on
Current
State. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Kath.
Thank you.
Coming up on the second half of Current State, MLive's Angelo Whitrock. And we're going to talk a little bit about the Detroit Auto Show Car of the Year, which is manufactured in Lansing, Michigan. The Cadillac ATS is the Car of the Year down in Detroit. Also, the Detroit Free Press's Joe Rexroad on last night's Spartan win. I'm Mark Bayshore. You're listening to Current State on WKAR. Current State on WKAR. Good morning. I'm Mark Bayshore. You can reach us via email at currentstate@wkar.org. And here on our first day, we're obviously pretty interested in what you make of the program and eager to hear your programming ideas or positive or negative criticism, whatever you want. Also follow us on Twitter at @KARCurrentState. MLive's Angela Whitrock joins us for a look at business and the economy and money stuff. Hi, Angela. How are you?
I'm fabulous, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to you. I found out you were the first person I heard from this morning to learn that the Lansing-made Cadillac ATS was named the Car of the Year at the Detroit Auto Show.
It's really fabulous news. You know, this car was unveiled last year at the auto show, so it's a really sweet, fast turnaround when you think about it. The first one came off the line in July. A lot of us were there. It was a great turnout. It's a beautiful car.
Yeah.
The folks who built it are tremendously proud of the job they've done. And obviously it paid off. I mean, it's racking up awards left and right.
Yeah. I think the challenge for Cadillac, as I understand, is really, I think they're going to retool the CTS, mm-hmm. as I understand it. But that's been the flagship model for Cadillac and what has been a roaring success for a long time now. But, you know, now they've got enough successful, it's a nice problem to have, you know, they've
right.
got enough successful models. It's like, how do they position these things against each other?
Right, and what they're trying to do, I think, is, you know, my grandfather drove a Cadillac when I was growing up, and they were...
A Datalac, yes. Yeah,
huge cars that were more for cruising than anything else. And, you know, one thing that you notice about the ATS, they describe it consistently as fun to drive.
Yeah.
You know, the commercials show how nimble it is. The engine options, the size, everything about this car is geared toward people who want to have the luxury that Cadillac offers, but have fun while they're in it. They don't want to...
Well, it's positioned to compete against a BMW and a Mercedes.
Correct.
So
it's in the
sporty ones.
Yes,
the sporty.
In the compact luxury market, which has been, you know, historically pretty tough for any American automaker to crack. So, you know, being named the car of the year... As a compact luxury vehicle, you know, competing with beat out the Ford Fusion and the Honda Accord, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
Car of the year, huge, and in that market, amazing.
It wasn't that long ago that Saturn Aura was actually named the Detroit Auto Show Car of the Year, and it feels so funny to say that now because they killed Saturn, obviously.
Right.
So the Saturn Aura is no more. You still see them on the road, but I don't know. GM seems to fare pretty well when it comes to the Car of the Year award at the Detroit Auto Show.
They have been. You know, and one thing that's also interesting is that the Dodge pickup truck, I think it was the Ram, won Truck of the Year. So you have two sort of cars, two winners that both came from the bailout in a way.
Yeah.
You know, these were GM and Chrysler were both supported by... You know, the federal administration when they were in trouble, and now they're both winning awards.
Right. Well, now let's move on to other topics here. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we learned last week that some properties that were part of City Center 2 in East Lansing turn out to have some unpaid city taxes. What do you know about that?
I actually have a story up this morning. There are three properties that we're talking about here. Two of them are on Grand River. One, a lot of local folks will recognize, is the former Citizens Bank building, huge building on the corner of Grand River and
sure.
Abbott. The other affiliated properties with that are sort of this little strip mall a little further west. Then there's a third property on Evergreen, these old apartments, Evergreen Arms. All three are part of some new redevelopment proposals put forth by a couple of related companies, and all three owe back taxes. When you add up the costs of the taxes that are owed, it's over $113,000.
Hmm. And this just came to light last week?
This did just come to light last week. The Lansing State Journal broke the story with the one parcel on Grand River, and then... This morning we released the information about the others. And this is not, you know, the first time that things like this have happened. There's a history of developers in town who've had problems like this, and it's, you know, unfortunately not that uncommon.
It's not an uncommon problem. Are all three of these Strathmore properties? I mean, this
yes,
is Scott Chappelle.
Yep.
Scott Chappelle and Strathmore, who was the godfather of the original City Center 2 project that finally went down last summer.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
He was selected as the developer. He's told me multiple times he has not a lot to do with these, but definitely documents and state filings show otherwise.
And nothing happens then until $113,000 gets paid off?
Well, that's the tricky part. The city attorney in East Lansing has released some has released an opinion at the behest of Vic Loomis on the city council that says you can't actually stop a project from moving forward just because they owe taxes.
Really?
Now, this is a sort of, it depends on what your definition of is moment. It really depends on what your definition of delinquency is. They say no one's in delinquency until the taxes are turned over to the county, which happens March 1st. But then they say once the taxes are turned over to the county, they owe the county, not the city, so they can still do business. So East Lansing taxpayers are probably going to be a little bit concerned about, you know, authorizing a money-making venture for someone who's not paying their fair share.
So we wait and see on any development. That you're saying development may actually move forward even if the taxes aren't addressed.
Correct.
Okay.
And, you know, taxes are the least of the problems with the parcel at the Citizens Bank parcel. That's actually been in foreclosure since October. And the Chappelle company will lose possession of it permanently if they don't pay off over $500,000 mortgage by the end of February.
And is the city council taking this up formally this week, or has this already been on their agenda?
It's been on the agenda. They will be looking at the City Center 2 properties on Grand River this week. They'll have a public hearing, then probably send it back to a committee for further work. But it looks like, you know, this is on their radar. They'll be talking about it. No one's really sure when a vote would happen yet.
A lot of downtown development in East Lansing seems to be focused around the Ann Street Plaza. You know, mm-hmm. every time I drive down through there, there's something really noticeably different about that. And with everything happening there, it makes the old bank building in that area just look even bleaker, unfortunately.
It's been a real eyesore for the community for about 10 years. It's, you know, the bank building was open when I first started school, which was, you know, decades ago now.
Well, I remember that, yeah. I had an account there.
Yeah, I did too. It's something that's been on the city's radar for a long time. That was one of the reasons they had these high hopes for this public-private development that ultimately, as you mentioned, fell through. But it's an eyesore. It's the gateway to the city, and it looks, by comparison, as you mentioned, just awful.
With the tax season approaching, a lot of people seem to be evaluating whether recent Michigan tax policies are working. The work the State Journal did yesterday suggested they're not. That seems to be a pretty hot topic.
Well, it was a really fascinating article and great reporting. You hear a lot about these policies that are being enacted in order to create jobs. And, you know, at the same time, the administration, the Rick Snyder administration, has said, we're not going to point to 40 jobs were created because we enacted right to work or 50 jobs due to this tax cut. What they say is that they're ultimately attempting to create a better climate for doing business. Whether this is an A plus B equals C sort of proposition, no one can tell. I mean, Charlie Ballard's a really respected economist at MSU, and he said, you know, it's almost impossible to tell whether these job gains over the past 2 years are the result of any policies or just outside factors.
No, is that what he said last week at the Detroit Economic Club? I think he was down there for something happening.
He may
there.
Have, yeah. I wasn't at that one.
Okay. There's so many metrics. That's what I can't get over. Everybody's right. Got their metrics they
well,
can point to.
Well, and even the jobs numbers don't quite add up. You know, there's the State Bureau of Labor numbers, and then there are the numbers that everyone else estimates. And so, you know, really it's a crapshoot. No one really knows.
What are you working on this week?
I'm working more on some East Lansing development news. I've got some news coming about a local company that's been selected to help make the pandemic flu vaccine. If we had another half an hour, I could give you a complete rundown of everything I'm working on.
Actually, well, Bob Trezise is going to be in tomorrow morning from LEAP, so we're going to give Bob a half an hour to run down everything. He had a laundry list of projects in the State Journal here a week ago Sunday, I think. It just went on and on and on and on. And so we're going to have Bob and Jeff Smith in tomorrow to talk about that. Are you going to take in the car show then? Are you tempted to take in the car show?
You know, I'm tempted to take it in. I am always shopping for a faster car with a bigger engine, much to my husband's chagrin. but I really do hope to get down there this week. And if not, you can bet I will be following the coverage religiously.
The very green Angela Whitrock, always looking for faster and bigger engines. Angela, thanks an awful lot.
Thanks so much, Mark.
Appreciate your time. Well, a couple of times a week here on Current State, our plan is to hook up with the Detroit Free Press's Joe Rexroad to run our fingers through sports. Joe, welcome to Current State.
Thanks for having me. Very exciting.
We look forward to this a lot.
Yeah, it should be fun.
You and I rubbed shoulders in a previous media when we both had previous media assignments. here a number of years ago when I was over at WJIM, and you were still at the Lansing State Journal. But I want to talk about your transition from the Journal to the Free Press here in just a minute. But MSU ended up winning by 10 last night, but it was a tight game most of the way. We're 3-1 in the conference now, if I remember correctly. What do you take away from last night's game with the Cornhuskers?
Well, the big thing was for a few minutes there, it looked like Brandon Dawson might have a severe knee injury. Of course, the same knee he hurt last year. He tore the ACL on his left knee. Looked really bad for a minute. So I think just the fact that he came back, ran back onto the court, was probably the big takeaway for the night, just the fact that they avoided disaster there.
I was amazed. I mean, it looked bad when they took him off the court. He looked like he was crying, you know, because his career might have been over or something like that. To see him come back out was really wild.
Exactly. I mean, he had a towel over his head, and I think he was sobbing. I think he really thought the worst. And I think the whole team, if you looked at the bench and Tom Izzo, I mean, for a few minutes there, they're trying to stay in this game, which is a lot closer than everyone thought it would be. And they're thinking, wow, this might be it for Brandon Dawson. But once he got back in, they still had to really fight to win that game against possibly one of the two worst teams in the Big Ten, missing two of its players. Really had six guys who had played all year in that game, and they still were able to hang with Michigan State. So still some concerns about the way this team's playing.
Was Tom generally – I mean, it was a win, but how was Tom after the game?
Well, I think, I think mostly he was just – glad that Dawson was okay. You know, I mean, that's what we talked about after the game, but he's not happy. I mean, it was a night where the guards did not play well. Michigan State's big men played very well. Derek
really,
Steph,
I read 82% from the field for Nix, Dawson, and Payne.
Right.
82%.
And then the guards are, I believe, 4 of 26. So it was just sort of a strange night. But Gary Harris, of course, hits the big three-pointer late after missing his first 10 shots.
Yeah. What does MSU need to work on most as we enter the heart of the Big Ten season, do you think?
That's the thing. It seems there's not a consistent weakness here. You know, turnovers have been a problem this year, but they've actually done a better job with that. You know, the guard plays up one night, the big men are better one night. So I think they really just need to just get more consistent as a team. You know, free throws have been strangely off in some games too, but it's hard to put your finger on one thing. They just sort of need to play more together as a team. They need to get multiple players having good nights at the same time.
Yeah. Can you put the Penn State game on – it's Wednesday night, isn't it?
Wednesday night.
Can you put that in some context for us?
Well, again, that would be your other possible one of the two worst teams in the league.
Yeah.
And Penn State, I thought, would be better this year, but Tim Frazier, their best player – was lost for the season with an injury early in the season. You know, again, a shorthanded team. They have a couple of good guards in Jermaine Marshall and DJ Newbill, but this is a game Michigan State should win easily if the Spartans played the way they can play. But, you know, they seem to be playing to the competition, so if it's a competitive game, I can't say I'd be that surprised. I think it's a potentially dangerous game just because of the way this team just – isn't able to put big runs together on anyone.
Okay. Now, before the college football season recedes any further into the past, what's your take on how the dust settled on the Big Ten? And if you could spend a minute, obviously, on Michigan State kind of in particular.
Well, I think a rough year for both. The Big Ten certainly had a very difficult non-league season. You know, even getting a couple wins in the bowl season was good and should have had a couple others or could have had a couple others, but Minnesota and Michigan come to mind. Michigan State, a lot of people picked Michigan State to contend for a Rose Bowl, myself included. You know, of course, 6-6 in regular season, just getting into a bowl game, you know, big disappointment. There's no question about it. I think it was a disappointing season for Michigan and Michigan State. You know, so you come away from this season. Obviously, Ohio State goes 12-0, but they're not eligible to play in a bowl game, which is almost embarrassing in its own way. I mean, it's just really a rough season all the way around for the Big Ten. But I thought Michigan State winning that bowl game was a nice final moment for them and should be able to contend again next year.
The Detroit Free Press's Joe Rexroth. I want to talk to you next time around about your transition from the State Journal. I mean, all of your stuff still appears in the State Journal, if I'm not mistaken, but you're actually working with the Detroit Free Press. Now, I want to talk about that transition next time and ask how that's going. It seems like it's going great, but next time around, which will be Friday, as I understand.
Absolutely.
Okay. Joe Rexroth of the Detroit Free Press. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
Well, it's been a stimulating couple of weeks here leading up to our new show, and I figured the least I could do is line up a qualified therapy dog so all of our stressed out staff could pet the puppy dog and start bringing all of our collective blood pressure back to planet Earth here this week leading up. So Patty, the Black Lab, has joined us in the Current State studio this morning, along with her close friends from Ionia County, Jeannie Wernette, who's in charge of crime victims services in the county, and Ionia County Prosecutor Ron Schaefer. Welcome to Current State, and thanks for coming in all the way from Ionia County this morning.
Thank you.
Jeannie, explain what Patty's job is, please.
Patty's job is to work with our child victims of crime, and when they come into us, she helps to kind of set a different mood, so to speak.
I can imagine.
They come into an environment that's a little foreign to them. They're afraid. They have to talk about things they don't want to have to talk about, and she changes the dynamic of their experience with us.
She's good at her job?
She's very good at her job, without even knowing it.
Can you give us an account of a little kid that Patty's worked with that illustrates why this is such a good idea? I know she's pretty new. She's new on the job, right?
She is, since August.
August, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Yes, we have recently had a little boy, 8 years old, very uncomfortable with the concept of having to talk about what he had to talk about, was not able to do it. However, he would lay on the floor with Patty and just was able to find a comfort zone with her when the prosecutor asked him in an interview to explain what had happened to him. He couldn't tell her, but he could tell Patty. And so he lifted up her ear, and he just talked into her ear.
Oh, my word.
And for several minutes, he continued to talk. She couldn't hear what he was saying. But finally, she said, she kind of leaned down to him, and she said, "How's it going?" And he said, "Good, we're just about done." And so he was able to say the things that he couldn't say to a person to her, because I believe that, you know, the children understand that the dog is not judging them, not... there to make any assessments, just there to listen.
That is amazing. And you witnessed this, Ron? I mean, you were there for this or not?
No, this was one of my assistants, but I immediately heard about the story. And frankly, that's exactly what we were hoping for when we decided to get into this program.
Sure.
We heard about it, and it's been absolutely fabulous for us.
Is Patty an AFSCME member?
No, not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay. I think you could save some serious, you know, the budget director is going to come to you and say, "Is there any way we can train Patty to drive a snowplow?" You know, eventually,
nice.
It would do wonders for the legacy costs in Ionia County out there. But does a dog with a role like this require any special training, or is she just being herself?
Patty came to us from Leader Dogs from the Blind in Rochester Hills. So she was actually trained and graduated their program and was in service to a blind person. For a variety of reasons, she came back to them, and they re-suited her to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so her training is very thorough, the best you can get through Leader Dogs. But essentially the skills that she has that we use are basic commands, but her real magic is worked in just being her.
And Ron Schaefer, was this your call ultimately as county prosecutor to give the green light or to say thumbs down on this?
It was, and Jeannie brought the concept to me some time ago. We've been talking about it almost since she was hired about a year and a half ago now. And then we also consulted with our county board of commissioners. I let them know that we were going to bring this dog in. And there's no cost to the county other than they pay for insurance. Along with our other dogs, we have some dogs in the sheriff's department. But other than that, Jeannie takes care of the dog and pays for all the dog's expenses.
I'm wondering if there are counties where there are regrettably more kids who end up having to testify in court that really ought to be looking at this program. Do you know about that?
Well, we know that our program is the second one in the state where a dog is attached to the prosecutor's office. Oakland County also has a program. It's not attached to the prosecutor's office. But you're absolutely correct. I think this is just the beginning of what I believe is going to be a trend, because it, as Jeannie mentioned, it is so effective, and it completely changes the dynamics, the tones of the situation. When kids come in and have to tell us things that are very uncomfortable for them. And often we have to ask some questions in excruciating detail.
Oh, yeah.
And so the dog totally changes the dynamic of the situation. And as a prosecutor, we should do whatever we can to make the system easier for the victims of crime.
Oh, it helps everybody.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. It's nowhere near as traumatic for the kid. The test, whatever the kid says, the testimony might be more reliable. I mean, in some cases, I imagine you may not get testimony out of a young person at all, which is kind of what you said a few minutes ago.
Right. That's correct.
The reliability is an interesting point. You know, in Michigan, there are statutes that allow for support persons for young child victims. And we don't have a lot of case law out there dealing with dogs yet, but it's an interesting point because right now a support person can be mom, it can be dad, it can be an aunt or an uncle. When we segue into using the dog as a support person, one of the interesting things is we remove all human ability to influence that child's testimony.
Yeah.
So you know, a pat on the back, a blink of the eye, a squeeze of the hand, all that's eliminated when we use the dog as a support person as opposed to a human being.
Right. So right now, the support person can't be anything with paws.
It can. We just don't have any higher appellate opinions that say one way or the other.
Okay. Are either of you dog owners?
Yes,
okay.
I am.
You are?
Yes.
It's pretty extraordinary what happens, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ron, what about you?
We always have been. We lost our dogs a few years ago, and we intend to start again.
Okay. Well, Jeannie Wernett and Prosecutor Ron Schaefer of the Ionia County Courts, many thanks for coming in. Patty is just short enough that she's been hiding underneath the console here in the studio, so I haven't been able to. You can't get her to woof or anything, can you?
No, she makes no noises
when,
at all.
When you have dogs on radio, that's what you're supposed to do,
yeah.
So I had to ask.
Yeah.
So anyway, Jeannie Wernett, who runs the Crime Victim Services program in Ionia County, along with County Prosecutor Ron Schaefer. Many thanks for coming in with Patty. It was a lot of fun.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Tomorrow on WKAR's Current State, join us for Bob Trezise of the Lansing Economic Area Partnership. We'll discuss the outlook for 2013 in economic development. Pianist Minsu Sohn and more tomorrow on Current State. We hope you've gotten some value from our very first edition. We had a few months to plan for this show. We have, 23 hours to plan for the second show. This could get interesting, folks. Be listening. A lot of thanks are called for this morning. Current State's executive producer is Peter Wharf. MSU Dairy Store Ice Cream is on Peter at noon. Our producer is Joe Lindstroth. Welcome to Mid-Michigan, Joe. News director Kevin Lavery, a big thanks. And for all the vigilance and assistance, Aaron Young's our engineer. Thanks, Aaron. Have a great day. I'm Mark Bayshore. You're listening to Current State on WKAR.